Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. You can watch today's program by going to Ustream.com, then searching for Gary Null. Today, we're going to begin with the latest on health and healing, including looking at how hemp repairs our DNA. Then we're going to look at fish oil, the DHA fraction, and how it's really good at turning off inflammation. New research on over 1,000 children finds early nutrition programming shows big reductions in disease later in life. Another compound in broccoli is found to have anti-cancer abilities. We know about indole-3-carbinol, but this is something new. And a new study, bee venom found to destroy HIV, human immunodeficiency virus. That's good news, plus a lot more. Then we're going to take a look at nurses in America. A lot of them, one-third of them, are leaving their jobs. They're also losing faith in vaccines. So we'll have a special public health report on what's happening to nursing. Also today, we'll look at the consequences of the Gardasil vaccine. One mother's report about Courtney, who was completely healthy until her pediatrician insisted she get the human papilloma vaccine, the Gardasil vaccine. I'll tell you what happened. Then we have had people say, well, why are you opposed to the CDC, the Center for Disease Control? They're a government agency. They have responsible scientists. Indeed, they do have responsible scientists, but not policymakers. And in every institution, it's the policymakers who are political appointees who determine what those responsible scientists can and cannot bring forward or do or say. So to address a doctor who emailed me today from the work of Christina England, VacTruth, I will give you what the truth is of the CDC. They are one of the most corrupt and dangerous organizations ever created. That's just not hyperbole. I'll back it up with solid, irrefutable, on-the-record proof. Life on $2 a day. For the first time, we're seeing extreme poverty at this level. How bad is it? 3.4 to 3.7 million children alone are living on less than $2 a day. I'll explore that with you. Also, spy agencies work on psychologically profiling everyone. I repeat, every human being in America. They want to know everything about you, and they're getting it. And why would they want this? What gives them the legal right, since the vast majority of people have never committed any crimes, do not represent a terrorist threat, but they're doing it in spite of all that. So I'll share that with you. Tomorrow, I will be reading a special commentary from Rabbi Michael Lerner, Mourning for Judaism Being Murdered by Israel. I believe that it's important that this be shared because he is one of the most progressive, honest rabbi scholars. He is a strong supporter of Israel, but he is not a strong supporter of Zionism and how it's manifesting. But a lot of Jewish people are not. Lots of rabbis. In fact, a lot of the Orthodox rabbis were the ones leading protest based upon how this conflict was spilling out in Gaza. So I'll share that. I think it's enlightening. It's not as accusatory as it is constructive. And we like to share things that empower people. Also, the police state, U.S. military plans to crush all political dissent groups in the United States, target leaders with sniper fire, from Thomas Goetz, Global Research. Now, we already know from WikiLeaks that they had snipers on buildings ready to take out any of the people they were told to take out, the leaders of the Occupy movement. That we got from the documents from Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. So, What does that mean now if you want to protest? Any protest? I'll get into that if time permits. Let's begin. Hemp protein is very popular now in the United States. It's absorbed and utilized about like rice protein or split pea protein. And because it's so good for you, a lot of people are using it in their protein shakes. The latest from Becca Wolford is that hemp can also repair damage to your DNA. Now, the DNA in our body, the deoxyribonucleic acid, is the hereditary material found in humans and animals and organisms. You have DNA in every cell of your body, and each cell's nucleus has DNA, which is rolled into structures that are our chromosomes. We have 23 pairs. Now, most genes contain the information needed to make functional molecules called proteins. A few genes produce other molecules that can help the cells assemble proteins. Now, according to this report, the journal from the journey from gene to protein is complex, tightly controlled within each cell, and it's called transcription and translation. And together, transcription and translation are known as gene expression. Now, during this process of transcription, the information stored in our DNA of the gene is transferred to a similar molecule called RNA, or ribonucleic acid, in the cell nucleus. Now, both RNA and DNA are made up of a chain of nucleotides bases, but these have slightly different chemical properties. So when they did this study and they looked at the hemp molecules that were being taken into the body as hemp protein, it was able to help repair the damage to the DNA, oxidation, ultraviolet radiation from the sun, radiation from X-rays. It helped against viruses. All these things were benefited. So one more reason to have a good quality hemp protein. Another thing we can consume that will help our body, especially turn off inflammation, is DHA. Now, you can get DHA from plants like flax and other sources, but you can also get it from fish. This is from Harvard Medical School. I'll quote verbatim. Chronic inflammation is a major factor in a wide range of problems, from arthritis to cardiovascular disease. And DHA, found in fish oil, is known to temper this problem. A new research report appearing in the FASEB journal, that's a major scientific journal, helps explain why DHA is important in reducing inflammation and provides an important lead to finding new drugs that will help bring people back to optimal health. So then it goes on to describe how, when we have DHA, it helps turn off inflammation in the body. I don't believe that we need new drugs. I believe that we just need more DHA twice a day. A good research study from the University of California, San Diego, shows that when you teach your children about good nutrition early in life, they benefit tremendously later in life. Reduction in heart disease, reduction in obesity, and that's what this is saying. So if we want to have a healthier adult life, get off the junk food early in life. Common sense would tell us that, but it's also good that they're verifying it. Now, you have a group of vegetables called cruciferous, and these have strong immunomodulation anti-cancer properties. Virtually everyone I counsel that has cancer, I'm recommending a diet high in cruciferous nutrients. Broccoli, cabbage, radishes, daikon, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, kale, they're all very important. And the more you have, the better it is. What we're now seeing is that with broccoli, we've known about indole 3-carbinol, and that was considered the jewel of the cancer prevention from a compound in broccoli. It could reduce tumor size by 65% in laboratory animals. Researchers with Ohio State University's Comprehensive Cancer Center did some research on this and found that I3C, the indole 3 carbinol, actually works to combat a molecule known as CDC25A, which is responsible for cell growth and proliferation. And CDC25A occurs at high levels in breast, prostate, liver, and endometrium, colon, and esophageal cancers. It also is elevated in Alzheimer's disease, and so it's one way that contributes to prostate cancer and breast cancer. So what is the link between eating your broccoli or broccoli sprouts and the chemical in the broccoli called I3C and CDC25A? What's beneficial, quote, I3C, that's indole 3 carbinol from broccoli, can have striking effects on cancer cells, and a better understanding of this mechanism may lead to the use of dietary supplements as an effective and safe strategy for treating a variety of cancers and other human diseases associated with the overexpression of CDC25A, end quote, from a Dr. Zhou, who was the chief researcher on that. So in lay language, every time you have broccoli, every time you will end up benefiting from the indole 3 carbinol, the I3C chemical. There are other chemicals like isothiocyanates, which are in broccoli. There's probably about 200 different phytochemicals, phytonutrients, in broccoli. But broccoli sprouts are even better than broccoli. So get your broccoli sprouts. And you can grow broccoli sprouts. It takes you only about 6 days from seed in a tray, soaking it overnight, the seeds, in a jar, draining it twice that day. And at the third day, you give them some sunlight, put them in a windowsill, and they chlorophyll up. They get nice and full, and they have a nice tangy quality to them. And take a what would be like a whole pint and eat a pint at a time in a salad of broccoli sprouts. And the best way to eat broccoli to get maximum nutrition from it is simply to lightly steam, not boil, steam. That will break down the tough outer fibrous material called lignocellulose. And then as it breaks it down, then you take it off the steamer and then run cold water over. It's called blanching. You blanch it. Now that's like having a shampoo with hot water, and then you run cold water over it. It closes the pores. That helps prevent a lot of the frizzing on hair and makes your hair more manageable. So if you run cold water over broccoli or cauliflower or asparagus or Brussels sprouts, you do the same thing. I actually prefer broccoli cold rather than hot, because cold I can marinate it. I can cut the crowns off. And by the way, it's a lot of animals love that broccoli stem. It's really good for their gums and teeth, and they chew on it, and it's nutritious. So you could give that to them to chew, and you eat the broccoli crowns. That's where the nutrition is. But if you turn your broccoli crowns upside down, so the head is sitting against a substance, and you put some extra virgin olive oil in there, and the seasonings. I like to put mustard, a horseradish, and a little apple cider vinegar with olive oil, and some cayenne pepper, black pepper, and Himalayan sea salt, and you make a paste, and in effect you allow the broccoli crown to soak in that overnight, and then you use that in a salad. Wow, it's just delicious tasting. A new study, and by the way, this is important because there's a lot of good work on bee venom, especially with arthritis. This was done at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis. And they have shown that bee venom, its main active component, melitin, carried via nanoparticles, is able to destroy unhealthy cells and tumors caused by viruses like HIV. Now, this melitin, M-E-L-I-T-T-I-N, is a potent toxin in bee venom, which can poke holes in the protective envelope which surrounds HIV, as well as numerous other viruses. And it does not harm healthy cells, only the ones infected with the virus. And so This is important because it also works for other viruses as well. Quote, there should be a lot more research on this because it's very positive, and that's important. So that's good research, and now let's see how they end up bringing that to the market. And finally, lavender, aromatherapy, proven to calm premenstrual emotions. Researchers from Japan at a major university, including Kyoto University, conducted randomized crossover studies on women who were 20 years of age, who were experiencing severe premenstrual emotional symptoms in the late luteal phase of their menstrual cycle. Now, these emotional symptoms have been defined by conventional medicine as premenstrual syndrome, and at its worst stage as premenstrual dysphoric disorder, or PMDD, which typically appear in the late luteal phase, about 1 week prior to the menstrual cycle. And they were able to find that there was a major benefit when aromatherapy, what you smell, is brought into the body, and the lavender and the molecules in the lavender, when you breathe it, have an extremely calming effect and made it a huge difference. Now, here's two suggestions. First, lavender fields are one of the most beautiful sights in all of nature. If any of you have ever driven through the French fields near the Riviera, where the Mediterranean is, you can see miles and miles of lavender. That's also true in Italy as well. And you smell it, you see it. It is so romantic and sensual and beautiful. And so if you have a farm, if you have land, let's say if you have an acre or more, you could plant it in lavender. It's a little more effort than planting grass or something like a wildflower, but the rewards about a year later, 2 years later, are phenomenal because not only you get the aesthetics of it, but there's a lot of things made with lavender, and you can hand harvest them and have handcrafted lavender that has unlimited possibilities, including selling it to people who are crafters who will craft the lavender into oils, and then they can get the aromatherapy. So lavender oil, and you can spray some lavender oil on your pillow. And so all night long, you're breathing in it, and it's keeping you calm. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and nutrition. Now we're going to take a look at a few other things that are important, and then we're going to play a tape. This is from Dave Milhavik. It's called an article entitled, "One Third of Nurses Are Leaving Their Jobs and Losing Faith in Vaccines," I'll quote. It's not just anti-vaccine parents and groups on the internet that are shutting down vaccination. Many doctors, nurses, and other health professionals are coming around and grasping the gravity of how vaccines are damaging our bodies. Turnover of nurses, registered nurses, are now at record highs, with more than one-third leaving their jobs within the first 2 years, and trust in health authorities' vaccination is at an all-time low. A study in the current issue of Policy, Politics, and Nursing Practice reveals that an estimated 17.5% of newly licensed registered nurses leave their first nursing job within the first year, and one in three, 33%, leave within 2 years. The authors point out that many of the problems with existing turnover numbers in the literature, but many nurses are simply unhappy and growing numbers are resisting vaccination for themselves, which is presenting problems in enforcing environments where it is mandatory to be vaccinated. Quote, a study in Vaccine titled, What Lied Behind the Low Rates of Vaccinations Among Nurses Who Treat Infants, end quote, is evidence of a growing resistance to vaccinating infants in the developed world. What is unfortunate is that although many of these nurses refuse the vaccinations themselves, they proceed to administer these poisons to infants to protect their employment. that is quite cowardly, contradictory, and at the very least shameful, not only as a health practitioner, but as a human being. Other problems relate to more nurses being pressured by doctors to mislead parents about false sense of security while attempting to address and convince anti-vaccine parents that their misconceptions about vaccinations are based upon myths. Then it goes on to talk about the lies. Now, I know a lot of nurses. We have a lot of nurses in this audience and physicians. And I hear the horror stories. I hear the stories of how doctors cover for one another, nurses cover for doctors in the operating room when the doctor has made a mistake. The patient doesn't know. They're under general anesthetic, so they're not aware. And then everybody covers it up. It's not put into reports. And only if a patient brings a lawsuit and there's discovery and depositions will they ever begin to find the truth. This is epidemic. If you think the blue wall where police won't report against other police even when they know they've done wrong is strong, it's just as strong in medicine. And there's lots of danger. In fact, give you an idea. This year we're in, we may have as many as 700,000 Americans die because of inappropriate choices in medical care, who didn't have to die, and over 10 million injured. You would think that with that amount of people sick by medicine and killed by medicine, that someone would be concerned enough to do an independent evaluation. It won't happen. This is very brief, but I want to continue to offer a forum to all the parents who have seen completely healthy babies or children or toddlers or infants get vaccinated and then no longer are healthy. I'm quoting from D.F. Birrell, saying, "Vax, Gardasil, the decision I will always regret. Dear all, Wendy, Courtney's mom, wants to share with you her daughter's story and what happened to her after receiving the Gardasil vaccine. Thankfully, only one shot. In the summer of 2012, I took my daughter to a pediatrician for her routine annual exam. Her doctor strongly recommended that Courtney receive Gardasil because they highly recommend this vaccine for teens. Within 3 to 4 weeks after Courtney had her first and only Gardasil vaccine, she complained of headaches every day, extreme fatigue, and nausea. She had little to no energy, which was not like my daughter. She became very moody, irritable, and almost depressed. Soon she was complaining about not wanting to eat, muscle weakness, and tremors. Her hands would shake uncontrollably along with her legs. I noticed at times her hands would look mottled, then turn purple and blue in color. If you've ever seen a person after they pass, this is what her hands look like. This truly scared me, as I'm a nurse by profession, and I felt like I was watching my sweet, outgoing daughter deteriorate. After going through many, many tests, Courtney was eventually diagnosed, and then we met with her case doctor. She diagnosed Courtney with autonomic dysfunction. This is a neurological disease that they are seeing more of. She has been placed on a high-salt diet, drinking lots of fluids, especially water, placed on an exercise regimen, and she takes a prescription 3 times a day. She was full of life until she received her first and only Gardasil vaccine, and this is a decision I regret every second of every day. If only I could turn back the clock. Therefore, to all the families out there who are thinking of having their daughters vaccinated with Gardasil, please, please be careful. Do your own research and see the high number of young ladies and guys who are experiencing serious health issues following vaccination. You have a healthy child one day, and after being vaccinated with Gardasil or Cervarix, this healthy child is no more. They develop unexplained health issues, which more than often not are misdiagnosed, and in many cases, a finger is pointed at them that their condition is psychosomatic. Please believe me, your child is sick and requires medical attention. never allow anyone to try and make this out to be a mental health issue. What happened to my daughter, I know and believe that her symptoms were caused by Gardasil, end quote. Over 145 now have died because of that. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to go directly from a break into an interesting investigative reporting piece. Let me set it up for you. What you're about to hear is a group, two reporters, who were told that they could do any story they want, so they decided to do an investigation of what happens with genetically modified milk. And they did their homework, they did their investigation, and then word went out, kill the story. This is the journey from having done a really exemplary piece of investigation to how special interest groups can kill a story, how much control they have over what is printed. Now, keep this in mind. I worked with over 1,200 people, personally, directly, 1,200 people with full-blown AIDS for years, every night. I never charged them. In fact, most of them got their medical treatment for free because most were poor. And so I pled their case to the medical doctors to do it pro bono for them, and they got that treatment for free. We watched them. 12 of those individuals that I put on my own personal protocol, which was 6 days a week, they had to get intravenous vitamin drips and homeopathy and zeolites and everything else. It was a major transformation, completely reversed their age-defining illnesses. They were so successfully treated that they were able to go on PBS over a two-year period. 9 of them appeared on Tony Brown's journal with their medical records, and he had already investigated their records. He had his own independent evaluations prior to even going on the air to explain what happened. A couple of years after that, we found people all over America using natural and alternative treatments for AIDS-defining illnesses. It took a year to organize, but we brought 100 people into New York with their doctors and their medical records who had made major improvements or were completely reversed their AIDS-defining illnesses. We hired a PR firm, and on 3 occasions, they sent press releases to every one of 7,000 media in the United States, plus departments, including the federal government's own AIDS program at the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, National Cancer Institute, Robert Gallo. Everybody was invited. We had a camera crew, and I had a very esteemed panel of scientists, academics, who had reviewed these people's records and were there to explain to the media the science behind each of the therapies. Mind you, mine was only one of at least 30 different treatment modalities. But they had reviewed everything. It took a year to plan this. Not one single member of the media showed up. Not one. Now, I personally spoke with a reporter for the New York Post a week before this and invited them. No one showed up. So when you hear this story, understand, I've personally experienced it, where you have successful approach, multiple successful approaches to AIDS, and nobody pays attention. Now, fortunately, we filmed the whole press conference. You'll see photographs of it. You'll see, I think, 22 articles I've written on AIDS, including holistic approaches to it. And yet, you would never know any of this if you listen to the mainstream media, like it didn't happen. But it did happen. And 1,600 people in this audience were at the church when no one came. We took that big church over on Center Park West, and we held a whole conference of the best therapies, and photographs of that conference and the videos are also posted. But again, you wouldn't know it from the media. Let's now go to a break. Then when we come back, we're going right into that. It's only 10 minutes. So you hear how easy it is for corporate America to kill a story on a major network when they don't like the outcome.
what Fox Television told us was that we were just the people to be the investigators.
Do any stories you want, ask tough questions, and get answers. So we thought, this is great. This is a dream job. Fantastic. The very first thing they had us do was not to research stories, but to shoot this promo, which was The Investigators.
Uncovering the truth, getting results, protecting you.
And they had a film crew and a smoke machine, and we were silhouetted.
Investigative reporter Steve.
One of the first stories that Jane came up with was the revelation that most of the milk in the state of Florida and throughout much of the country was adulterated with the effects of bovine growth hormone.
With Monsanto, I didn't realize how effectively a corporation could work to get something on the marketplace. The levels of coordination they had to have. They had to get university professors into the fold. They had to get experts into the fold. They had to get reporters into the fold. They had to get the public into the fold. And of course, the FDA, let's not leave them out. They had to get the federal regulators convinced that this was a fine and safe product to get it onto the marketplace. And they did that. They did that very, very well.
Hozelac is the single most tested new product in history and is now available to you specifically so you can increase your profit potential.
The federal government basically rubber stamped it before they put it on the marketplace. The longest test they did for human toxicity was 90 days on 30 rats. And then either Monsanto misreported the results to the FDA or the FDA didn't bother to look in depth at Monsanto's own studies.
The scientists within Health Canada looked very carefully at bovine growth hormone and came to very different conclusions than the Food and Drug Administration in the U.S. did.
Monsanto's engineered growth hormone did not comply with safety requirements. It could be absorbed by the body and therefore did have implications for human health. Mysteriously, that conclusion was deleted from the final published version of their report.
I personally was very concerned that there's a very serious problem of secrecy, conspiracy, and things of that nature. We have been pressured and coerced to pass drugs of questionable safety, including the RBST.
We wrote the story. We had it ready a week beforehand. They bought ads.
Farmers in the milk industry say it's safe, but studies suggest a link to cancer. Don't miss this special report from the investigators.
That Friday night before the Monday this series was to begin, the fax machine spit out a letter from this very high-priced lawyer in New York that Monsanto had hired. It contained a lot of things that were just off the wall false, just demonstrably false. But if you didn't know the story and you didn't know how we had gone about producing it, it would have scared you as a broadcaster, as a manager.
And they decided that they would pull the story and they would just check it one more time.
But the bottom line was that there was no factual errors in that story. Both sides had been heard from. Both sides had had an opportunity to speak.
1 week later, Monsanto sent the second letter. And this was even more strongly worded. And it said there will be dire consequences for Fox News if the story airs in Florida. And this time they freaked. They were afraid of being sued, and they were also afraid of losing advertising dollars at all of the stations owned by Rupert Murdoch. And he owned more television stations than any other group in America. I mean, that's 22 television stations. That's a lot of advertising dollars for Roundup, Aspartame, NutraSweet, and other products.
So we got into a battle. And the first deal was the new general manager.
And his name's Dave. And Dave is a salesman. And, you know, he'd pump your hand. How you doing?
Called us upstairs to his office and he said, what would you say if I killed this piece? What if it never ran? And we said, well, you know, we wouldn't be very happy about that. And he said, well, I could kill it, you know. And we said, yes, of course, you're the manager. You could kill it. It would never air. And he's hemming and he's hawing and he's back and he's forth. And we couldn't figure out, what is this all about? And finally he blurted out, look, would you tell anybody? You know, I said, I'm not going to lie for you. About a week later, calls us back to the office and says, okay, we'd like you to make these changes. In fact, you will make these changes. We said, well, look, let us show you the research that we have that shows that this information you want us to broadcast isn't true. To which he replies, I don't care about that. I said, pardon me? And he said, well, that's what I have lawyers for. Just write it the way the lawyers want it written. I said, you know, this is news. This is important. This is stuff people need to know. And I'll never forget, he didn't pause a beat and he said, we just paid $3 billion for these television stations. We'll tell you what the news is. The news is what we say it is. I said, I'm not doing that. And he said, well, he said, if you refuse to present this story the way we think it should be presented, you'll be fired for insubordination. I said, I will go to the Federal Communications Commission and I will report that I was fired from my job by you, the licensee of these public airwaves, because I refused to lie to people on the air. And it's thank you very much. You'll hear from us right away. Well, 24 hours came and went, and we didn't hear a thing. And about a week later, he calls us back, and now we've changed strategies. How about if we pay you some money and you just go away? And I said, how much money? Because, you know, when somebody offers to bribe you like that, I always want to know if it might be worth it.
He was going to offer us the rest of our year's salary if we agreed not to talk about what Monsanto had done, to not talk about the Fox corporate response in suppressing the story, and to not talk about the story, not talk about BGH again, anywhere, not take the story to another news organization. Zip up.
I said, you mean if I want to go to my daughter's PTA meetings and explain what's in the school milk at the school lunch program? I can't. No, you can never speak about this anywhere.
And Steve says, okay, write it up. And I'm like, write it up? What are you talking about? Write it up. And I didn't say anything. And Dave, he wrote it up. And he FedExed it to us a couple days later. And he said, are you going to sign? And we said, nah, Dave, we're not going to sign that. And he said, we'll send it back, okay? I said, no, Dave, we're not going to send that back.
It was, okay, we can't buy you out. We can't shut you up. Let's get the story on the air in a way that we can all agree it will go on the air. And we started rewriting and editing with their lawyers.
Well, during this 8-month re-review process, I say, jokingly, they did things like, for example, they wanted to take out the word cancer. You don't have to identify what the potential problem is. Just say human health implications. Any criticism of Monsanto or its product, they either removed it or minimized it. And it was very, very clear, I would say, almost every edit they made to the piece, that was the aim.
And we changed this and this and this, and then that wasn't good enough. Okay, now change this and this and this. Now change this and this. Version after version after version. 83 times.
83 times is unheard of. It doesn't happen. You shouldn't have to rewrite something 83 times. Obviously, they didn't want to put the thing on the air, and they were trying to drive us crazy and get us to quit or wait until the first window in our contract so that they could fire us.
They, in effect, announced that they were going to fire us for no cause. Well, this was a little much.
And Steve wrote a letter to the lawyer in Atlanta, whose name is Carolyn Forrest, the Fox corporate lawyer.
And I said, you know, this isn't about being fired for no cause. You're firing us because we refused to put on the air something that we knew and demonstrated to be false and misleading. That's what this is about. And because we put up a fight, because we stood up to this big corporation and we stood up to your editors and we stood up to your lawyers and we said to you, look, there ought to be a principle higher than just making money.
And she wrote a letter back and said, you're right. That's exactly what it was. You stood up to us on this story, and that's why we're letting you go. Big mistake. Big mistake. That says retaliation. You can't retaliate against employees if they're standing up for something that they believe is illegal, that they don't want to participate in. So that gave us the whistleblower status that we needed in the state of Florida to file a whistleblower claim against our employer.
And as far as our 2 or 3 years later, we got to trial. 5 weeks of testimony led to a jury verdict of $425,000 in which the jury determined that the story they pressured us to broadcast, the story we resisted telling, was in fact false, distorted, or slanted.
Fox News appealed the verdict. 5 major news media corporations filed briefs with the court in support of Fox's appeal.
You may recall that Jane Akre, a former reporter here, sued Fox 13 in a whistleblower lawsuit, claiming she was fired for refusing to distort her report. The appeals court today threw that case out, saying Ms. Akre had no whistleblower claim against the station based on news distortion. Fox 13 Vice President and General Manager Bob Linger says the station has been completely vindicated by the ruling.
What Fox neglected to report is this. Jane sued Fox under Florida's whistleblower statute, which protects those who try to prevent others from breaking the law. But her appeal court judges found that falsifying news isn't actually against the law. So they denied Jane her whistleblower status, overturned the case, and withdrew.
That gives you an idea of what you're up against when you try to tell the truth in corporate America, especially using a corporate media. And now for a segment of our program that goes into greater depth on an issue of health. This is for all of those people in this audience who are concerned about the very high cost of cancer treatment. William Falloon, publisher of Life Extension, has shared some invaluable information that I'd like to share with you. Because I was once on, just a few years ago, in fact, I was invited to Fox Network to do a debate. I thought the debate was going to be on autism and vaccines, the connection. Instead, I was surprised that there was a medical doctor with a woman who stated that her husband had passed from cancer down in the Carolinas using some form of alternative therapy, and it cost $72,000. I said, well, I'm sorry to hear that, but here's what we need to know. Was that the first line of approach? No. So in other words, after radiation, surgery, and chemotherapy had been tried and failed, then you look for an alternative therapy. And of course, did you look at the really good alternative therapies like Nicholas Gonzalez, Michael Schachter in New York, Dr. Al-Kaidi, Stanislaw Brzezinski, the Issels therapy? No. Well, the most important therapies that actually have valid claims they can make about being helping people with terminal cancer didn't try. Now, how many people died in that year from cancer but only using orthodox treatments? They didn't try alternative, just orthodox, radiation, chemotherapy, and surgery. Over 530,000. So let me get this right. You're trying to make an issue out of one person who didn't try alternative therapy initially and died. What about the 530,000 who used therapy and died? That doesn't bode well for the therapy, but every year we're losing over 500,000 individuals to orthodox therapy. Put it a different way. Let's say that this is the last 20 years. All right? Our war on cancer has been going on for 40 years, but let's just use the last 20 years. And averaging over 500,000 dead per year, well, that's, sorry to, you know, bring this to someone's attention, but that's an awful lot of people who are dead, over 5 million people who've died who should be alive if that therapy worked. But it doesn't. And that is not the way that people are approaching it. You cannot challenge the cancer establishment, but you should. Over 100 oncologists are protesting the outlandish prices charged for cancer drugs and how these inflated costs are economically unsustainable. Now, mind you, they're not challenging the therapies, the safety or efficacy, they're just challenging the price. So we're going to focus on pricing. Now, the more than 100 oncologists who authored the report noted that of 12 cancer drugs approved in 2012, 11 were priced above $100,000 a year per drug. So let's say that you have cancer for 3 years. That's $300,000 just on that drug. That does not include anything else. That doesn't include hospital, surgery, radiation, physician fees, and other medications the patients typically require. So if you add all that up, boy, you're at least at $150,000 or more per year. So private insurance premiums are soaring in response to skyrocketing medical costs, along with government meddling. Now, federal health care programs face insolvency even without this kind of price gouging. The oncologists protesting these high prices are experts in chronic myeloid leukemia, a bone marrow cancer that is responding unusually well to new cancer drugs. The dilemma these doctors disclose is that patients are surviving longer than expected, in some cases indefinitely, as long as they continue to receive their expensive drugs. Now, these doctors conclude that the price of these drugs, quote, are too high, unsustainable, may compromise access of needy patients to highly effective therapy, and are harmful to the sustainability of our national healthcare system, end quote. Now, these revelations from inside the cancer establishment will not surprise the listeners to this radio program, who long ago learned how regulatory strangleholds over drug development inflict harsh economic pain, but that's the way it is. And mind you, there are about 20% of cancer therapies that work, 80% that don't. When you're looking at this chronic form of leukemia called myeloid leukemia, it's a cancer of the blood and bone marrow. It's one of four main kinds of leukemia. It's characterized by the increased and unregulated growth of predominantly myeloid cells in the bone marrow and the accumulation of these cells in the blood. And treatment enhancements have been significant for this type of leukemia. In the 1960s, five-year survival rates were about 3 to 5%. Now, it's 90%, especially in the chronic phase, and it's one of the few cancers where meaningful treatment progress has occurred. So the more than 100 oncologists protesting the high prices are impressed with the anti-leukemic properties of these drugs. They note how some patients appear able to survive with chronic myeloid leukemia indefinitely as long as they have access to the expensive medications. The concerns they raise is how individuals or society can ever afford the high prices and why pharmaceutical companies need to charge so much after they earn back the cost of development. Unlike patients with metastatic solid tumors, colon tumor, lung, pancreas, brain, patients with chronic myeloid leukemia now live close to normal lifespans as long as they receive their appropriate drugs and adhere to treatment. In these patients, their condition has become different from cancers that sadly kill many, if not most, of the people within a year or two. So there you have it. You have these drugs that cost so much, and that's not the most expensive drug. That's the least expensive that was given on the chart. There's another drug that cost $138,000 a year, another one that cost $118,000 a year. So, wow, it's all about the money. Follow the money, and with this particular Medicare program, they can charge as much as they want. And what we should have is we should have two types of insurance in the United States. One, private insurance, so you can get whatever medical attention and treatment you want, and you pay for it through your insurance company. And then for everyone else, there should be universal health care, where you don't go bankrupt, you don't end up having very poor treatment, you end up being able to, if it's a hand that's cut or if you're in a car accident, no matter what it is, you're going to be treated. Now, our second issue today is on the heart. And Dr. Julius Gope wrote an article entitled Energize Your Heart, Save Your Life, Rejuvenate Cardiac Cellular Energy. So anyone who's had a heart attack, you know that you have a very limited time to restore cellular energy production. Failure to rejuvenate your blood-deprived cardiac cells results in catastrophic heart muscle damage. So new studies reveal how a low-cost nutrient can protect against cell damage that occurs during a heart attack and help rejuvenate your heart muscle, and that is a lifesaver. So what exactly are we talking about? We're talking about rejuvenation, cardiac rejuvenation. And cardiologists, by the way, are slowly recognizing specific nutrients that play a vital role in preventing and treating heart disease, particularly ischemic heart disease caused by a coronary artery occlusion, a blockage that underlies most heart attacks. So when deprived of blood flow, the injured heart muscle becomes flabby, unable to pump blood efficiently. The sharp drop in what is called ATP, adenosine triphosphate levels, experienced by heart muscle cells during the obstruction of blood flow and the long delay in restoration of those levels to normal, even after blood flow returns, is critically important after a heart attack. And this so-called ischemia reperfusion injury is now known to be the major culprit that produces long-term heart damage in survivors of heart attack, rendering tissue inordinately vulnerable to free radical damage. So here is the good news. We can rejuvenate the human heart. Exciting studies have emerged showing how D-ribose, R-I-B-O-S-E, D-ribose, affects the human heart tissue and its function. Investigators have shown how increasing ATP levels translates into improved heart muscle function, better blood flow, quicker recovery with protection from the ravages of reperfusion-induced oxidation. So, let's get our hearts protected. D-ribose. It fights fatigue and exhaustion, and it's good for exercise. It's specifically good for your muscles, and I would suggest everyone just have it as a supplement each week. Now, one other thing on this topic, and that is that the B complex is now showing that it can help prevent and lower the risk of strokes. When you consider that heart attacks and strokes together kill between 600,000 to 700,000 people per year, and so much of this is preventable, so shouldn't we take the time to make sure that we have a B complex each day? I suggest a 50 to 100 milligram for those at risk. And a good research project that was done in China showed that with the B vitamins, you could reduce the risk of experiencing a stroke. Now, that was so good that it was published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Neurology. At a major Tsinghua University, they did a review of 14 randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trials that included over 54,000 subjects, and then they analyzed it. And they found that the B vitamins administered in trials, including folic acid, vitamin B6, and vitamin B12, were phenomenal compared to placebos. In fact, they followed up for 80 months, and they found that the people who were most susceptible had elevated homocysteine levels, and that increases your risk of stroke. So reduce your serum homocysteine levels to below 10 micromoles per liter, and that can save your life. So you take the B, here's what I would suggest, and this is a quote from the study, quote, "Previous studies have conflicting findings regarding the use of B vitamin supplements in stroke or heart attack. Based upon our results, the ability of the B vitamins to reduce stroke is influenced by a number of other factors in the body, but it's specifically folic acid and B12 concentrations in the blood." So in lay language, here's what it's saying. If you want to help get you out of harm's way, I would suggest 400 micrograms of folic acid to 1,000 micrograms of folic acid a day. I would suggest 25 to 50 milligrams of B6 and 1 milligram of methylated B12 a day, plus 1,000 milligrams of TMG, trimethylglycine. If you do that, then you are making good judgments that could help prevent a stroke and save your life. Thank you all for listening, and I look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program.
Back, feel in motion.